Good morning, everyone. My name is Katie Taylor, and I am from Iowa State University. We hate Iowa. And I'll talk to you this morning about some work we, as Iowa State students, have done as teammates with the Ugandan University. So as an outline for the presentation, I'll tell you a little bit about the program in general and I guess the framework in which soil science fits. One thing that's a little bit different about this program in comparison to the other presentations today is that this is a very regimented class setup, and our challenge with this was getting as much information as we could within a very clear-cut, within very clear-cut expectations of a federal program. So I'll tell you a little bit about how we, what kind of challenges we encountered, what we did about them, what we still can do about them, and I guess the realistic solutions that we stand to gain there. So as a background for the program, this is something that Iowa State has done since 2006. From Iowa State, we have the Center for Sustainable Rural Livelihoods, which does a host of different things, from everything from working with different bean varieties to animal husbandry, and all sorts of programs like that. And then also there's a new department called Global Resource Systems, which is a new undergraduate program which is housed within the Ag College, in which basically everyone has a concentration. So you have agronomy, you have soil science, you have animal science, you have all these things, but you also add this on with the intent of making your work after graduation global. So there's Iowa State, and then what we do is we team up with Makerere University, which is a very big agricultural college in Uganda, and we team up with their faculty or their College of Agriculture as well. So we have those two academic institutions, and the third prong of this is the NGO Volunteer Efforts for Developmental Concerns. These are the people who are on the ground 365 days a year. They are always there. And they are beloved members of society. They know every student that goes through the schools. They're very involved, and they're kind of our godsend when it comes to students coming year after year and having this bloom of development and then making sure that doesn't all fade away by the end of the next year. So we had two primary schools that we focused on. One was Nakanyoni, the second was Namasagali. They both have school gardens. That's where we originally started working, was trying to get the school gardens a bit more productive. But then that kind of spread into a host of other projects, things that people could keep going year-round without, or they could kind of take the project and run with it really well. And I'll talk about those in a bit. So within the program, we had service learning, where we would work on projects around the schools, but we'd also teach. And we taught subjects like math, soil, weeds, root crops, poultry, or animal husbandry. That's what they actually had chicken houses on the school site. So they had this tiny little teaching college within it, and these really good opportunities to get hands-on experience. And we had things like health. So there's a small building on each of the school properties where there was a girls' boarding school. So what we did, for an example with the health, was we went to a hospital supply company in the area and bought a lot of materials and made little patterns for reusable pads to kind of help with enrollment for both students who were in the boarding house but also couldn't afford the boarding fees, to kind of help stabilize attendance throughout the year. So within soil, it was very high expectations, I thought, for fifth and sixth graders. They had things like the textural triangle to learn. They had to learn things like erosion, things Hans Jenny's five factors of soil formation, things that are very hard for a kid to understand. And not only this, they were going to be tested over this at the end of the year. So it's not, we didn't really have much wiggle room, but we had very high expectations, and we needed them to know exactly what the five factors were, what soil contamination is, what soil organic matter is, I mean, good luck trying to get a 10-year-old to know the difference between humus and a cow pie. So, some challenges were very clear. The first, obviously, visualization. How do you make something that's not very visual into something that, into a concept that a fifth and sixth grade year old, or fifth grader or sixth grader can actually grasp? Like with erosion, a lot of these processes take over 50 to 100 years to actually form. So how do you actually teach the magnitude of time on top of that? The second was budget. We got there not knowing what we would have to teach, because we get there and the first thing we have to do is ask the teachers what they need. No one's going to care if a bunch of people march in saying, we're going to save you and this is what you need to know. No. So we had to ask what concepts that needed to be taught. So with that, we didn't really have much to prepare. We didn't have any materials prepared. And we had a chalkboard, chalk, a guidebook, and the kids had notebooks. That's about it. So that was definitely a constraint. And then the third was age and confidence. This class system was set up to lecture, and then the students would repeat. So it was really hard to tell if the students were actually grasping the concepts, because they had been taught to nod your head, yes, do you understand, or even if they didn't. So it was really difficult to gauge your actual learning, because, again, my accent is really hard for them to understand. That was interesting to kind of learn what learning looks like. And then the attention span was really interesting, as these kids are put in 90-minute class sessions. When I was a kid, I never would have been able to keep attention that long. And then the last is family support. Depending on the family, sometimes, like if there were financial constraints that required the kids staying home, that could lead to a lot of variability in school attendance. So what the teachers were working on, so this isn't something we're going to reclaim responsibility for. We were part of a team that worked on making these concepts as visual as possible. So like a lot of these presentations so far this morning, we took them outside. We got them to look at real erosion. One of the schools, Namasigali, is right on a floodplain of the Nile. So that was a really good opportunity for a pedology lesson, things like that. We could look at sand, silt, clay. That was a great resource that was just absolutely accidental. Then we could look at soil biology. We saw dung beetles doing their work, and just you saw like all these soil ecology parts that I had only even seen in books or in movies. I had never seen it out there, in front of my eyes. So that was one attempt we made. And then as far as budget goes, we brought in a few things to kind of help jumpstart. In retrospect, that is something that we need to work on, making sure that that is constant and something that we can kind of rely on. It doesn't really help if once a year, some people come in and bring stuff and then it breaks once we leave. So that's something we need to work on the reliability of. And as far as the age and confidence goes, what we did is we stopped lecturing and we started asking questions. We would teach a bit, we'd ask more questions, and we'd call on the people that wouldn't raise their hands, because a lot of times they did know the answer, and a lot of times they just didn't want to look like the smart person, which is a really interesting dynamic I wasn't really bracing for. And then we broke up the class time. We put it into three different sections. So as soon as we saw eyes glaze over, we had them run around the building or something to kind of just get them kind of recharged and kind of get their brains reset a little bit, because 90 minutes for a child is a long time, and it's very, considering the complexity of these concepts, it's very understandable that their eyes are going to glaze over. And then the last part was family support, and that was something that goes into a lot of sociological opinions, and you can approach these however you want. What we did, or what the teachers had already done, was try to tailor it to what the family was looking for. make it as much of an ag school as possible. So that, like, they were the ones that were looking at how to bring things outside and actually, when it came to teaching lessons, kind of replicate what they knew their students were seeing at home. So that is what we kind of tried to do to kind of continue. So the interesting thing with having soils as a required course is that in areas where agricultural where the livelihoods are dominated by agriculture, this is actually a really, really unique opportunity to introduce people to biology, chemistry, physics, and in a very not simplistic, but it's a very good introduction or a good narrative hook. So with very little inputs, like the pictures there are on the left, you'll see a Kool-Aid filter in which you take soils with different mineralogies and you put grape Kool-Aid through it, and then based on the charge, it'll turn different colors. So things like that, which are very low cost, low input, but very visual. Good luck teaching soil chemistry to a child. It's very difficult, and it's very difficult to get them to visualize that, but with things like that, not only do you freak them out when you drink it at the end, but it's also just a really, really cool way to as a previous presenter was saying, getting as much of a sensory experience as you can. And then you'll see on the right that that's a Berlisi funnel in which you kind of chase out some of the soil mesofauna. And you can kind of collect them at the bottom. All it takes is a 2-liter bottle and I think like a pair of pantyhose. But things like that, which are very rudimentary, but the lessons can be very STEM-oriented, which is really unique. And I think there's a lot of potential to kind of use soil as an introduction to the STEM sciences. And those are my experiences, and I think it was a very much a learning experience for me, just because when I was growing up, science was kind of difficult to grasp until I had fun opportunities like field days and things like that. But you actually don't need to have field days to grasp something. And while it is an amazing opportunity, a lot of times people don't have the opportunities to do those. So I think finding low-input teaching plans is a great fit for soil science. If you have any questions, here's a shameless plug for the program at the bottom. I'll answer any questions if you have any.
We have time for one or two questions. I saw you guys were really interested in the grape Kool-Aid trick. Did you do that in your school?
No,
but we're going to try. it's you just need to find soils with different charges. Like you find like a black soil, you'll find a red soil, and then that's pretty much all you need.
Yeah. So that could be a very good project for the high school students or even for the elementary.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised they were teaching those things in an elementary school. Like, I didn't even get introduced into these concepts until at least high school. So that was, it's a very rigorous curriculum they have.
Did you encounter any non-scientific perspectives on soils that you might have to, whether it's some sort of a local knowledge that there might be concepts here in the systems that might not necessarily align?
You mean like metaphysical type of?
Just for maybe just belief systems, local knowledge that might be reinforced over a period of time because of the local conditions that don't necessarily fit a scientific reason. I'm just thinking about the cross-cultural components of kind of moving into that curriculum and so on, right?
I mean, the families we spoke with that we interacted with were actually really great stewards. So that was really, I mean, they have a certain amount of land and they take as great a care of it as they possibly can, and that was really commendable. I guess compaction was a problem, and a lot of times livestock will has a path through the school, and that was leading to some like less vegetation. And so it was more economic than anything, because people needed to get their livestock from point A to point B, and that was the easiest place. But then that was opening up all sorts of problems, like there wasn't any vegetation in the schoolyard, and Namasagali was right by the Nile, so there's a lot of wind, so much so that one year it ripped the roof clean off. So, I mean, but then again, that's kind of hard to, it's very much a butterfly effect type of thing. So it's hard to say, like, oh, this caused A caused B. But, I guess compaction was probably the most difficult to kind of portray, like, hey, this is a problem and it's something that people are causing. But it's also not our place to be like, you're being bad to your land. We said so, you know. Yeah.
I want to thank Kate again. And I'm